The following is intended for mature audiences only. Discretion is advised.
Thank you so much for downloading this episode of So What Do You Really Do? The podcast where I, your host, Dead Air Dennis Maller, talks to artists and entertainers about their day jobs. And on the podcast today is comedian, library specialist, and teacher, Aaron Patrick. Aaron Patrick is a pandemic friend living in Baltimore, where I currently am right now. Yay! So this is pandemic friends doing a podcast together while in the same city, but still doing it remotely because it's just easier that way. We did not do it face-to-face. I thought about it, and I might do a face-to-face interview, but it's so much work, and just figure out where to do it, where it's... Like, there's not enough good-looking backgrounds in where I'm staying at in Baltimore right now. I'm at my parents, my mother's house. Not even parents. My dad's dead. He doesn't have a house. He has a series of jars that he's in. But my... mom's house in Baltimore, kind of where I grew up. So let's address that. I think I said something in the probably the intro of the last episode where I was like, oh, my plan for the off season of Boston Duck Tours is to drive to LA. Well, that's not happening. I'm not driving cross country. I'm not going to LA at all. Staying here in Baltimore. I've been here in Baltimore since Christmas, and I'm going home just after Valentine's Day back to Boston. Honestly, here's what it is. I thought I could save enough money to buy a car and move and drive to LA and spend time out there. And I saved enough money to do one, not both. And I decided to do just neither. So here we go. That's fine. I'm doing shows down here in Baltimore and absolutely just having a good time being back in my city and hanging out with friends and in my old haunts and checking out some of the new comedy venues here in Baltimore, in the Baltimore area and D.C., Maryland, Virginia area, Delaware too. I'm doing a show in Delaware. That's why I have to pull up. Which, by the way, I was like, I got booked on a show in Delaware, and I'm like, oh, it's like an hour drive. I look it up. No, it's like 3 hours. It's like 150. Like, it's almost as far to the space in Delaware as it is Philadelphia. And I realize it's in Delmarva, which is like north of just Ocean City, Maryland. So it's either go from Baltimore, drive north all the way into Delaware, and then turn around and go all the way to the bottom of Delaware. Or just drive across the harbor in the Chesapeake Bay into Ocean City on the ocean and then drive up into Delaware. It's the most inconvenient place to get to from Baltimore, apparently, that I've just noticed. So that's going to be fun. That's February 10th at the Dream Big Performance Arts Center. We'll see what that place is all about. It's a new venue. Friend RJ Jackson's running it. That's going to be cool. But I'm just chilling, relaxing. My dog sister, we're going on walks to the racing track at the, not racing track, it's not a racing track, it's just a track at the high school I grew up at, taking walks every day and letting her run around and have fun, and I'm just enjoying a very slow-paced life being back in Baltimore, even though life in Baltimore is not slow-paced. But this episode, the comedian that we decided to talk to, the reason I wanted to talk to Aaron is because we were doing a show and I just wanted, we were chit-chatting about school life and such things. I was like, you know what, let's come on the podcast. And it was great to talk to somebody who is a library specialist, because you're going to find out librarians do a lot more than just like learn the Dewey Decimal System, although they really learn the Dewey Decimal System, which we'll get into that. And it's just one of those things about teachers that we were talking about things that I don't think about when it comes to teachers, even though I have friends who are teachers, but usually we don't talk about the jobs. So there's a lot going on here in the podcast about what is particularly happening at certain schools, how Aaron himself, by the way, it is E-R-I-N, but it is Aaron He. So we talk about, you know, his road into becoming a library media specialist, what that means, the convention, school conventions, which, like, that didn't sound like it was a thing. Like, professional development day just sounds like a day where teachers, to me, when I was growing up, just sounded like a day where teachers would get together and drink in the cafeteria when no kids are around. That's what I just assumed they were doing. But again, I went to school in Dundalk, so in Baltimore County. Maybe that is what they did. But, so it was a lot of things that you do. Being a librarian has changed from the days when I went to school to what their responsibilities are now. So that was a fun, interesting listen. And, of course, it's always fun talking to somebody who does the same job as me, but is also a parent, because I have no experience with parenting. So I find it already difficult enough to do doing what I do, let alone have to do it while taking care of kids. Honestly, taking care of my dog has become too much. That's become too time-consuming for myself. You know, the amount of times where I think about going out, I was like, oh, I'd rather just go home and hang out with my dog. I don't know. I think if I had kids, it would probably be more motivating to get me out of the house. And that's why I don't become a parent, because I don't want to be the kind of parent that resents their kids. Everyone says, oh, no, you'll love kids when you have them. No, not everybody does, and I don't want to be that one. So, yeah, that's why I don't have kids. I'm sure that's the reason why. Not the fact that nobody likes me and nobody wants to reproduce with me because I'm short, bald, and I have glasses. All the things that do not contribute to a favorable gene pool. But that is not what this... That last part is not what this podcast is about. But the podcast is about talking about schools, children, and becoming a faculty member of such schools. So please enjoy my conversation with teacher, library media specialist, and comedian, Aaron Patrick. One button. One button I was supposed to push, and I didn't push the one button.
That was it.
And it causes all hell to break loose in this elaborate moment. Like, it doesn't look elaborate because I was like, I had to find one wall in this house that is not covered in family photos, paintings that my grandparents had from 80 years ago that should be worth something, but they're not, or covered in like Catholic ideography. Like, this is the one wall in the entire house where I'm like, I could just have something blank behind me.
Live, laugh, love. That's all you need.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's what happens when you're broadcasting or recording live from your mom's house. And she does nothing but go to church with my sister, who does nothing but homeschool and church.
Cool.
There's a lot to be read into that. Just one sentence.
Yeah.
So how's the convention?
It was really good. It was really good, man. I literally left here, Baltimore. It was like 6-7 inches of snow on the ground. And then I landed in sunny Orlando, where it was like day one, it was 60, then 70, then 80, and then 85. Like, it just got warmer and warmer. It was awesome. But then when I came back, it was 72 here. It was like, it was great. And then the next day it was 40.
Yes.
So it's like back to Maryland weather.
Yeah. So. You know what? Same things were happening in Boston too. When I was looking at the weather, it's like, that's the thing about, like, when you live in one city and then you move around, you start seeing everybody has kind of the same opinions about weather with their hometowns. Or like, I'm surprised we're not seeing this more and more with social media. Like, we should have friends all across the country. We should all be seeing the same dumb posts about, it was snowing last week and it's shorts weather this week. Like,
yep.
Why we just should wait an hour everywhere.
If you don't like the weather in Maryland, just wait an hour.
Yeah, and they say the same thing in Boston too. It's like, hey, did you steal that from us? Like, you Boston thieves? Like, you cheat in your football games? Did you also cheat on your colloquial sayings?
When I lived in Charleston, South Carolina, same exact thing. They're like, oh, you don't like it? Just wait, because it would either rain or scorching hot, or, I mean, never got cold there, but yeah, they. You know,
or they'll drive
you everywhere,
or wait an hour and they'll drive you out with their racism. One or the other. So this was a teacher's convention?
Yes.
Right, yeah. Because I've been to a lot of conventions. Yeah. I've been a part of a lot of conventions as like AV tech, and I've never been to one for teaching. So I'm like trying to picture what that would be like. Hey, come over here and check out the number 3 pencil.
Well, it was education technology, so it was all the ed tech companies that were pitching all their stuff and their ideas and everything to teachers and district administrators and principals and heads of school and everything. So that was that. And then people from schools like sharing ideas and things that they did. So, you know, crazy stuff, crazy stuff. But there was a lot of talk about the number 3, though, I will be honest. So that's a tricky one for sure. That is a hot topic. In the education world.
2024, why are we still writing with this second most designed pencil?
Time for an upgrade, folks. Time for an upgrade.
What was your role there? Were you there to speak or to view things? Were you the liaison for your particular school to go down there and be like, hey, this is what they're doing. Maybe we should do that. Or, hey, we should buy this Blackboard application to do homeschooling or whatever it is that they're selling down there. Or like, were you the proxy for someone there, or are you the one that makes those decisions?
So I was the rep from my school. So somebody went from my school last year, and they sort of see what is it? At our school. We have a thing called innovation department. So it's kind of all the schools and like areas of teaching that don't fall under like traditional, like math, English, history, science. We kind of like collectively everything else. And she went last year. And so I'm a library media specialist in my day job, or a librarian to the layman. So she said, you know, at the conference, it's all aspects of education and technology. And so there's a track there for library media specialists like myself. So I went there because the conference I was going to go to, they decided to have it during the week of my spring break. And I decided I'm not going to go to a conference when I'm on spring break. So I went to this one instead, which ironically was in the same place. It was in Orlando. So I was just kind of there looking for stuff for my school and myself. And yeah.
So you were there on behalf of the library media specialists. So last year, you and the other person were switching off. Were there other people from the school? Was it like a group of teachers from the school that went? Because like, hey, we need somebody to check out the math stuff. Send a math teacher. We need someone to check out science stuff.
I think that was one of the original plans, but it just ended up being me. I don't know if when I put it in, I was like, we should have a whole team. Like we got a whole bunch of us. And then my supervisor was like, that's a great idea. And I think both of us thought the other one was going to put the team together. And by the time I realized there was no team, I was just like, I guess I'm going by myself. So yeah. So just me this time, but probably, I mean, it's one of those huge things where it's not just one focus. Like you could send anybody from any subject area and they're going to get tons of stuff from there. It was really cool.
All right. Well, what was like, what, dude, I'm ignorant. Like I'm, tell me all about this convention because I'm totally excited. Like I know I've said this many times, and for regular listeners, they know that I went to 6 years of community college and didn't graduate. I am not an educated man. I'm not a prostitute to stand in for teachers. I am not one to tell anybody how they should or should not be doing their jobs because I barely have a job. I'm currently unemployed right now. So my job is full-time podcaster and I haven't recorded anything in 6 weeks. So I'm really shit at what I'm supposed to be doing. But like, so like, what is there at a convention for a library? Like, is there new inventions and signs? Like, I don't know what it is you're going to be looking at. Like, are they reiterating the Dewey Decimal System? I don't mean to be rude and put down the business, but I have no idea why librarians would go to a convention.
So, two things I'll let you know. One is the Dewey Decimal System, it's still doing great. It's still out there. Ironically enough, when I took my master's in library media and tech services, the whole class was the Dewey Decimal System. Essentially, it was a 9-week course. Once, and we met once a week, you would show up and you would be assigned a range of numbers like 000 to 100. And then you would have to like, what are the 10s? What are the 20s? What are the 30s? And you'd have like a quiz on it. And that was just every week. And it's funny. I remember all of us thinking at the time, like, this is so dumb. When are we going to need this? But I remember a few numbers here and there. And it always like freaks people out. They're like, you know, I need a book on U.S. history. I'm like, oh, 973. Like, oh, I want a book on a dog or like a cat, like 636, like stuff like that. And you can just throw, and it's like that weird trivial knowledge that you have. But at the conference though, so library is a lot different than probably how it was when you were in school. I know it's different than when I was in school, to where it's not just, you know, somebody, you know, an old lady sitting in a rocking chair, shushing you and reading books and, you know, all that kind of stuff. It's a lot different now. There's a lot of involvement of like 21st century digital learning skills, because that's something every school needs. And that usually falls on the librarian because we see everybody. So it's a lot about learning like how to do like research skills and digital literacy and all of the, you know, the skills that don't necessarily fall under math, science, history, English, that are sort of like hit across the board to teach those like foundational skills that reach across. So it's just different people sharing new ideas, things like that. One of my favorite ones that I brought back is this thing called Magic School AI, which shout out if you want to give us a discount. but it's like ChatGPT for teachers. So it's like if like anything, like you want a lesson plan or I don't know, just different things. Like you're like, I'm reading this book and I need 10 multiple choice questions on this chapter from Jane Eyre. Hit it and boom. Pop out for it. It's like ChatGPT specifically for teachers, which is really cool and really helpful because I think that's a great tool, and AI is a whole other crazy thing. But I will say this, the other cool thing I got from the conference.
That's a whole nother conversation. There's like good and bad about AI, and I can't decide which one to go in because like I see its helpful and usefulness, but also I see where it's going to take in our jobs or whatever the complaint's going to be about it. But at the same time, it's like it is going to be a useful tool if we use it right.
I should have had you come in. So along with being a librarian, I also teach computer science. And one of the things we did was I had ninth grade classes do a debate on is artificial intelligence, has it positively or negatively affected society? And my favorite part is taking kids that really think AI is good and making them have to argue against it and then vice versa. And it was really interesting because there's good points on both sides. There's really good application things with AI, and then there's some just really crazy, scary stuff like the Terminator might happen. I'm just putting it out there. Like it might. And if the machines are listening, I'm on your side, guys or well, gals or
however you, however you AI bots identify as whatever gender construct you can create between your robotic legs that will end up crushing me and my skull when you step on my lifeless body as you go over the hills into the camps where we have our last bastion where John Connor is hiding. That's whatever you call that. But yeah, no, it's like, well, we've also had like so much, we've had so much AI, not to get too distracted, but we've had so much already. Machine learning is AI. We've had that for years. Like people complaining about AI creating art, and they're complaining about that, but nobody complained that the past four Toy Story movies were made with machine learning. They drew the keyframes, and then they had machine learning technology fill in the other drawings between the keyframes. Like we've been using that for 30 years, but nobody complained about that. You know, it's same thing. Yeah. Like, and this is totally off subject, but like when it comes to like the whole FCC, internet, like the keeping the internet free and use. Yep. We all want free internet, but then we also what goes along with that same law is you getting a free Netflix subscription with your Verizon account. Those are literally the same law. So you let one in, you got to let the other one in. So, but
it's crazy. All the stuff. When it comes to all the stuff of like, you know, like AI is going to take our jobs. There's always something coming around. It's just, you have to learn to adapt to it. I mean, I just take from teaching from a standpoint, some people say like all this AI stuff and ChatGPT, it's making like anybody can be a teacher now. And it doesn't matter who we hire and everything. So, but I look at it as it's just a way of making our job, we can be more efficient at our job. The time it would take me to come up with a 10-question multiple choice test that is constructive and like helpful and actually like will test my students' knowledge, it could take me an hour and a half if I really want to be good with it. But instead I can have one created for me, and then I can decide and I can tweak it a little bit and make it more personable and work better with my students. And I can do that in 10-15 minutes, which is like, now I have all this extra time to think of like, now I'm not so burnt out at the end of the day, and I can send emails to my parents or touch base with my students and all of that kind of stuff. So, I don't know. It's just how you look at it. And if things are always adapting and changing. There was a time when we didn't have a wheel, and I'm sure the cave people are freaking out. They're like, what's this thing? This is going to be the end of society. What? Like, and somebody's like, no, it's not. It's going to be the next best thing. Adapt to it or die.
The wheel's going to take away our job of clubbing our wives and bringing them food when they're unconscious.
Exactly. And no,
how am I supposed to get big and strong by carrying things if this wheel thing's going to carry them for me? I'm not going to be strong enough to protect my wife.
100%. And that is actually my next upcoming TED Talk.
The recent correlation I put together just literally the other day, and obviously this is going to be something I have to sit down and write about. But the amount of people that complain about self-checkout, like, oh, I'm never going to do self-checkout, never going to do self-checkout. All right, well, you still pump your own gas. There was a time where somebody pumped your gas, but you're okay with doing that now. What's the difference between scanning your groceries and pumping your own gas? Here's what the difference is. I can steal more groceries than I can gasoline. That's basically why.
yeah.
Like, yeah, I'm not getting paid 100%. To be a cashier, but I'm making that money back on the amount of loaves of bread that I'm sweeping behind my back, like Dax Shepard did 100%. In that Dane Cook Walmart Costco movie. That was a deep reference. Jessica Alba's in it. Okay,
I was actually working at Costco when that movie came out, and they did it right. That's what it's like there. Like, 100%. It is spot on. So,
other than, you know, the attractiveness of a Jessica Simpson and a Dane Cook working at Costco. Other than that, they got everything out.
That was not happening. Gary and old Gary with his bike shorts checking your receipt as you go to the door. No, not happening.
The fact that all employees had all of their teeth also still.
Yeah.
Well, all right, so
but a hot dog and a soda for $1.50. You can't beat that deal.
Can't beat it. And it's decent food. Was it
somewhere? I'm going to say Instagram Reels, which meant it probably happened on TikTok 6 months ago. But the dude that he went an entire, I think it was an entire week of eating the Costco $1.50 hot dog soda for every meal for a week.
Oh, that's at least like when that guy, when Morgan Spurlock did the supersize me, at least he had variety at McDonald's to eat. Now, yeah. I mean,
I think
the variety is a fish sandwich or a burger, but still, like, just eating a hot dog for a whole week, no.
$1.50. I think he said he ended up spending like $60 for the whole week for food, and then he ended up losing like 5 pounds. And he's just maybe I'm malnutrition. And we're all, yeah, exactly. That's it. I'm like, I think there's a long-term effect here that you're not seeing.
Look, all I ate was hot dogs and I'm in ketosis. I'm like, no, you're dying is what you're in. Ketosis is your body saying, hey, I need help. Stop.
And the only thing I said was, I know that this is not a good thing because Costco did not come out and say, yeah, let's try this new diet, because they know it's in those hot dogs. Like, it's not good. It's not good. So. But it is good. I mean, in moderation, I guess, just like everything. But
well, since we're talking about the subject of schools and meet library media specialists, let's talk about how and why you got, like, it's weird that, because we just think everyone who works at a school is either a teacher or a janitor. They're like, that's it. It's principal who's also a teacher, technically, teachers, and then a janitor. But there's so many other people in the support business of schools that when we just automatically think that, oh, you work at a school, you must be a teacher. No, you're a library specialist, which means you're probably also a teacher, but you're specific in one specific genre, area of that school, doing that job. Why library specialists and how? So what in your youth made you go, want to grow up to A, be a part of teaching, and two, specifically in libraries?
So my mom was a teacher growing up. So okay. I kind of always family had business. It in the back of my mind. Yeah. And I always kind of had it in the back of my mind of, you know, I would be good at this. I'm a people person. You know, I like just learning and things like that. I was like, oh, I could do that. But then when I went to college, my original goal, and this is where we had some similarities, was I was going to be a radio disc jockey. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it was going to be sports or alternative or whatever it was, but I was like, that's what I'm going to do. And then I went to, and I played college soccer. I went to Anne Arundel Community College. So community college grad as well. I talked to, the funny thing was when you played athletics, they set you up with an academic advisor, which was awesome. And I told him what I wanted to do. And he laid out the track of like, this is what you can do. This is, you know, how you get to where you go. And then he kind of circled after college and he put a question mark when I was like, what does that mean? He's like, well, a lot of it is luck. Like, he's like, you could go to school and get all and do all this, not, and you could get a good internship. But he's like, you might end up doing some like jazz, you know, local show in Utah for 5 years and then this place and that place and everything. And he's like, essentially what I'm telling you is there's no certainty in this industry, but if you're passionate about it and this is what you want to do, he's like, you can do that. Well, I was just like, I don't know. Cause I grew up with the, you know, you get a job for 30 years, you buy a house, you have a family, you get stability. That's the thing. And I was like, that's too much of a risk for me. And so I was like, let's go back to teaching. Let's give that a try. And then so started taking education classes, just realized this is what I'm meant to be. I started teaching at a magnet school in Baltimore County for 4 years, where I was teaching kids about research. It was Deep Creek Middle. in Essex. So not the Deep Creek, but Deep Creek. And I was like, yeah, there's a Deep Creek in Essex. It's not the same.
No, I know of it. And the reason I also asked is because I'm currently across the street from a magnet high school that I went to. But I went because I lived across the street, not because I was talented enough to get in the programs. I applied for three. I applied for art, vocal, and theater. I didn't get a single one of them. Nope. But hey, you know what, Dennis? If you want to join the after-school improv team, we might let you audition next year. Hopefully he'll forget. And I did. But the second year, I remembered.
There you go. There you go. And then so when I was there, part of the thing is when you're a teacher, especially in a public school, so you have to get a teaching license when you graduate. And to keep that license after a certain period of time, you have to hit essentially what is either your master's degree or master's equivalent. And so I was like, all right, I'm going to start looking at programs for masters. And in Baltimore County, they have these great, or I don't know if they still have them, but they had these great partnerships with local colleges. And one was the college I went to, Taft University. Go Tigers. We played in the national
TMD
championship game and got destroyed in, I think it was 2018, something like that. Anyway. So I went there and I was looking at, and I was going to do special ed because my mom was a special ed teacher. And I was like, I think I could do that.
Which, by the way, in the day of PC, I know it's the correct term, but it sounds like it's the most insult. Like, it sounds like the term that we're supposed to get canceled for. Like, it sounds like we're not allowed to call. I think it's just the shortening of education that makes me feel like that whole thing sounds dirty. Special ed, like special education.
When I was in school, I would hear people, okay, they would call it like the SPED kids.
Yeah.
And I was just like, yeah, the SPED kids. I didn't think about it. And it didn't click until I was like, looking at my master's, like, oh, SPED is special education. I'm like, this is the perfect spot for me. This is where I belong.
I can relate to them.
Yes. Yeah, I get it now. It took me 10 years, but I got it. But I missed the deadline to submit to, so they call it their cohorts. And so I missed the deadline for special education through Towson University for master's by like literally 12 hours. And I'm the next day I'm in, I'm complaining to one of my colleagues who's the library media specialist. And she said, you know, there's a program for library media. Why don't you let me, and I'm in it now, and they do one every year. Why don't you let me tell you about it? And essentially it's the idea that you get to teach everything. You get to work with everyone. And so I'm to this day, I'm pretty sure I'm undiagnosed ADHD. The idea that like my attention span just jumps so quickly from thing to thing. And if you're just talking fast and moving a lot, I think it's awesome. So, which is
you're
great
an easy
for me,
sell.
especially when hosting open mics. As long as you're moving, I'm into it. So then I just like, I'm going to check it out. And so I just started taking the classes and realized it's the perfect spot for me. Cause it's, you know, when you teach say like English, you know, you're teaching kind of the same thing year after year, but with where I'm at, I can be like, oh, I'm going to work with the English teachers this month and then the history teachers and then the science and then, and just kind of, you get to do a little bit of everything, which is perfect for me. And so that's kind of really fell. And I hit a library at a really good time where it's starting to make that shift from sitting back in a rocking chair, reading stories and just really pushing the kids need to have books, which is still a big component of it. But understanding that we can be the people that focus on digital literacy and 21st century skills and digital citizenship. Like all of those things that are, I think, probably even more important than, you know, learning historical facts and science and all of those like that, but having that sort of underlying foundation that allow you to do even more with all of that stuff once you know and get the knowledge. So.
Well, here, like, it's so interesting to hear, like, my best friend has worked at a library his entire life from like teenage years to adulthood. And then a couple years ago in his 30s, he quit because it's go nowhere. He can't go anywhere. Like he's hit unless he gets a master's degree, which he's not going to go do. He can't become a librarian without that degree. So he quit. Mm-hmm. He goes work at a brewery doing manual labor for a couple years. Like, yeah, this sucks. I'm going back to the libraries where they have to lift their books. And so he's back at the library. So like, I know the library, like county libraries from that perspective. And then growing up in high school, I don't know if I ever interacted with my librarians. I'm trying to think of right now, the only time I think I ever interacted with my librarians was two things. And one of them, I will admit, was very pivotal. I'll tell you that on the second one. The first one was we were having to do create resumes and do faux job interviews for a career of our choosing. And the librarian ran that program. I'm pretty sure, in conjunction with like an English teacher or somebody. Uh-huh. And then the second was, they were not helpful in this incident, is that in my high school library across the street, I found a copy of The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy by Douglas Adams, which is part of the reason why I am what I am today. And I remember going up to that librarian with that 100%. Book and like, hey, do you know anything? Like, just the title caught me. And to this day, at 42 years old, it is the only book that I've completely finished all the way. Sorry, it's one of two books that I've read all the way through. Other one was also at a library, and I looked at the title, picked it up, took it home for the library, read it from cover to cover. And that one was How I Lost 5 Pounds in 6 Years, the autobiography of Tom Arnold. Don't judge me. Don't judge me.
That's
awesome. I asked the librarian, like, what is, so do you know what this Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy
track. Both of those checkouts track 100%.
And the librarian goes, I don't know, I think it's like a British book or something. I was like, all right, cool, thanks. And I read it and absolutely fell in love with it. And here we are. So I guess, thank you, librarians.
100%. Yeah. I think people don't realize the impact that they can have. I think, and it's, you know, I'm literally behind the desk, so I get to see it from time to time. But I mean, the way, this is going to sound super corny, but just the way that books can impact people's lives. Mm-hmm. Like if you find that story that you can connect with, it can open up. And I don't mean like get all reading rainbow and like it can open up a whole new world to you. But like, if you have trouble finding things in your everyday real life that relate to you, that you can connect to, you're not always going to find someone or something, because it could be where you are. Your personality doesn't match where you grew up, but there's a book somewhere that can, you know, has a story that's similar to yours or feels similar to yours. And it's really cool when you can help kids find those stories and make those connections. And it doesn't always happen, but you know, when it does, it's really, really cool to help kids find those things.
Well, I also have to imagine, depending on where you are in your career, makes a bigger difference, because there was a short period of time where as a what do they call them in Boston? They call them book pals, where I would go to Boston public schools, and I do a whole bit about it, but I would go to Boston public schools every week and I would read stories to third graders. It was through the SAG-AFTRA program, because they wanted to like give back community. Like this thing that I'm paying into is giving me the opportunity to do volunteer service. Thanks, SAG. I'm glad that's where my dues are going to. You organizing me to send to a school a thing I could have figured out how to do on my own. Anyway.
You're paying to do community service. Yeah.
Which, you know, honestly, I've also been forced to do community service. So this was voluntary. So, you know.
Yeah.
At least this wasn't court ordered. But
yeah,
I enjoyed it. And like, these are third graders. So these, these are 8-year-old kids. So it's like, the story you tell them matters probably more than like you who teaches in a high school, but what the things that you're interacting with the high school kids with makes no impact to third graders. So it's like, you know, like finding the right story to make kids go, like to make a third grader's jaw drop and make them pay attention is so much. I got to imagine is such a different specialty than like, hey, you're trying to figure out something about Alexander the Great. Well, that's section 937 or whatever you said earlier on that history. I don't know. 967, 967, it's his.
932.
Okay. Now we need a Rick Springfield cover song or a parody song of just library Dewey Decimal numbers.
There's an audience for it. Yeah. I mean, there's not a lot of us, and most of us are pretty close to retirement age. So, I'll give you an example of something exactly like that. So, a couple years ago, I made a display of books with all LGBTQ protagonists. It was like 15 books, just set it up and had it out for like, I don't know, like a month. And not a single book had been taken off the shelf that should be checked out. And so I decide one day, all right, I'm going to put a new display up. So I take it down. And then one of the teachers is an advisor, comes to me and she says, is there any way you could put that display back up or maybe make a list of all the books you had on there? I was like, yeah, sure. Why is that? And they're like, oh, well, one of my advisees told me that they were bummed because you took it down because they've been reading each of the books in the display. And it's like, that's not possible. Nobody's been checking them out. They're like, oh, they have a Kindle. And so they would go and read. And so it's this idea. And then I was just like, oh, like, okay. And it was a kid that identifies in that area of LGBTQ. And I don't know which kid it was. I don't know where they identify and what they identify as.
All right, let's get together. We're going to find them now. Let's go. that was not what this was about. Now.
It's that idea that, you know, you're just putting 15 books on a table and a sign that says, you know, what those books have all in common. Like, that can have an impact on kids, and that it's just really cool when that kind of stuff happens. And that's one of the things that I really love about being in the library is you get to impact all of the kids. Some kids you're obviously going to have more, but you have the opportunity to see everybody and see the whole school community and all the pieces and everything. So it's kind of neat sometimes in that situation.
And that, especially right now, where that is not just you're opening that child's mind to the normality of what they're living with, mm-hmm. you know, to be able to try and make that a normal thing for them to live through, but you're also now giving them some comfort because they are the ones that are actively being attacked right now. They're the ones like it's, I mean, I'm sure it's akin to in the 1960s, a librarian putting up the Three Musketeers. Like, hey,
yeah,
this was written by a black man. I know we're you feel like the world's against you now, but look, look what one person of color has accomplished. You can do that too.
Yeah.
I mean,
and it would be great if we didn't have, if we could just put books out and didn't have to say all those things, but I feel like we're in a place where, you know, there's people that don't feel like they're seen or identified, and, you know, I can't change the world, but, you know, there's little things you can do. I mean, like, kind of weaving in here, like the comedy thing, whenever I like run a show or produce a show, I'm very cognizant of the fact that, you know, I don't want a lineup of five guys that look just like me. Like, they could all be really funny, but like, we're all pretty similar in our perspectives and experiences in life. We all grew up at different places and different times, but like, there's a thread that connects us all together. But let's get some diversity in there for the sake of, like, I like hearing other people's stories. I don't want to hear my story told from a different angle. I want to hear a completely different story and perspectives and things like that. And, you know, that, again, that's just, it's those little things. And that's like, we do at my school, we do a lot of DEI training, which I know that's might be a trigger word for some people. The idea of training people about DEI.
But it's
just, you know, you
wait. I know what it is. DEI. That was, in the show Breaking Bad, Walter's brother-in-law, that was his job, right?
So it's diversity, equity, and inclusion.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, no, that's... I see you guys, sorry.
Look, I'm not going to say... You. I'm not dyslexic,
DEA,
but also...
That's DEA, yeah. So you would have got me better. So I've more recently watched Narcos more than I have watching Breaking Bad. Breaking Bad's great. Side note, I got to go to Phoenix and I got to go to the Breaking Bad Museum.
Nice.
It's like, it's so cool. It's like literally, it's like three rooms big, but it was one of the coolest museums I've been to for a TV show that.
Did you get to drive by the house and see the sign that says, please stop throwing pizzas on our roof?
I didn't get that far. No, because I was out for another conference as well. And so, that's one of the other cool things about teaching is you get to. If you work it right, you can get yourself to a lot of places that you haven't been. Like, I've gotten to go to California, New Mexico, just a bunch of different places for that. So, yeah, Florida a couple times. So that's nice.
Except for it's the Florida part. Other than that, it's.
Yeah. I will say, I did think it's funny. I feel like at BWI, I feel like every time you go into like a big airport, it's always the governor that is like the loudspeaker voice, like, welcome to the airport from governor, whatever. But in Orlando, it's not DeSantis. It's the mayor. And I think that was chosen specific. Like, I don't think that you're like, maybe we don't have him talk to people that are coming into the state right away. Let's give him some time. Let's give him a little time, you know, test the waters a little bit before we throw old Ron in your face. So.
No, I'm so bad at politics. Is Ron DeSantis the one going against Trump but then gave up? Or is he the one that got fired from Congress for using taxpayer money to support OnlyFans? Or is that the same guy? I don't know.
I don't know about the second part of it. I just know the fact that he was running for Republican candidate for president, and now he's not. And he said before how horrible Trump was, and then as soon as he drops out, he talks about how great he is.
Yeah, of course, that's how it works out, right? Like, oh, he's terrible.
Yeah, they're all
hey. Now, when he wants a job in the cabinet, when he's like, you know what, I can't look. I took my shot at the king and I missed, and I'm not calling him a king. But you know, like did that go near your head? No, that was a misfire. I think that was Haley. I think that was somebody else. You know what? You and me should go get her together, if you know what I'm saying.
Yeah. Yep.
Like, I really feel like I just read a transcript of an actual conversation.
Yeah, I don't know. 100%. That tracks as well. So
originally, before you became a liar, you're talking about your coworkers. You were already at a school teaching before you got your master's. What were you teaching then?
So I was essentially teaching research skills. So I worked at the magnet school that I worked at. The program that they focused on was engineering and essentially like 21st century learning. So I was teaching essentially sixth graders, a little bit sevens and eights, but mostly sixth graders, how to do like basic research online, and then also how to essentially utilize like the Microsoft suite, like how to use Word, how to use PowerPoint, how to use Excel.
That's what they're teaching kids in school, because I had to learn all of that on my own. I had to, because I came up in that time where there wasn't an expert to teach you how to do Excel spreadsheets. We were all just trying to figure out Excel spreadsheets together. But I guess that's equivalent to my time, somebody coming in teaching us how to actually physically type on a typewriter. Now, granted, there were still type, like,
and now we have there classes was like a that, like what we're doing between, here.
Yeah, there was a couple year difference between like typewriter and actual typing on a keyboard at a computer screen. Just like a couple years difference. They were still using typewriters like when I started high school. So I guess that's the equivalent of, you know, computer lab personnel now.
I mean, I tell my kids all the time, my tech class was you walked into a computer lab, which that doesn't exist anymore. And then you walked into a computer lab and on the board was a paragraph and you had an hour to type that paragraph. And then you would print it out, which that took like 5 minutes by itself. You know, that
like dot that. Matrix like, printer, the, rip up the little holes.
Yeah.
The most kids today do not understand the satisfaction of ripping off dot matrix holes off a piece of 8.5 by 11 paper. Oh.
Yeah, that was the thing. And then you turn it in, and then the teacher, like how you would grade like an English paper. They're like, did you have all the spaces, capitalization, you know, all that kind of stuff and everything. And like, that was it. That's all you did, like for a whole semester. And like, it didn't really get harder. It just got like the paragraphs got a little longer, and like, that was it. And now it's a whole day. Like we have at my school, like we have a couple years ago, we had a club where we were teaching middle schoolers how to do podcasting. Like, it's insane.
That,
the difference
because
of
that's
what
literally my college degree. Yeah. My college degree is only good for one thing. It's this right here. Why are we teaching this in high school? You're taking away my you're not taking away my job. iHeartRadio decided to take that job away from me. But and now they host my podcast. So they don't host it, but they let me put it on their app, which nobody listens to podcasts on iHeartRadio. No. Except for, don't even get me started with iHeartRadio.
Not according to the commercials. And according to the commercials, it's the number one spot
now,
to go to.
But when I worked for them, I pitched a iHeartRadio podcast to them. So let's see here. I was let go in 2018. I left for Boston 11 years ago Saturday. Saturday being my 11th anniversary since I left.
Happy anniversary.
It was the day I left the day before the Ravens won the Super Bowl.
Nice.
And then on this trip, I was like, oh, look, I'll stick around to the Super Bowl because I can't leave before another Ravens potential Super Bowl. And we can see how that worked out. But so about 12 years ago, I was able to, I got somebody's ear and I was pitching them an iHeartRadio podcast where it was me interviewing artists about their love of radio, growing up with radio and, you know, using Everclear's AM radio as the intro song for it. And they're like, nobody would listen to that. Nobody listens to the podcast. All right. And now 10 years later, after that, they finally decide, this podcasting's the thing. Let's hire a bunch of celebrities to host podcasts. We're all like, oh my God, podcasting's so easy. Yeah, because we paid you $80 million and everyone does the work. All you do is sit around with your friends and talk. Fuck you. What's his name? The Bates guy.
Bill.
No. Arrested Development. The guys from Arrested Development and Sean Hayes.
I'm really good at faces. I'm horrible at names.
Yeah, he was on Arrested Development, the main character. He was in Ozarks. Why can't I? Jason Bateman. Yes. The Bates guy.
There you go.
Bateman. Yeah, Jason Bateman. and Sean Hayes and the other guy also from Arrested Development all got, $80 million from Spotify to host their podcast. Smartless. That's what it's called. Apparently I'm the smartless ones because I'm paying to do this and not getting paid to do it. And I can't even think of the name of them. So apparently I am the problem and they are it.
History where the guy that had the idea isn't the one that gets paid. You get the guy who invented the chicken nugget? He doesn't get the money from the, or like, was it like liquid pay? Like all of these examples, like in history where like whoever had that idea, the people who had all the money were like, that'll never happen. Fired. And then immediately make that idea a thing.
So. The acquisitions of ideas. Anyway,
that's what you don't get rewarded for being forward thinking in corporate America. That's what it doesn't work.
No, yeah, no. Of course. Am I the forward thinking one? I am the literally broadcasting from my mom's mother's house with a closet backdrop, which you don't even want to know how many hats and purses are stuffed inside of this door behind this door right now.
One was probably hanging up on that hook behind you.
They were. Yes, they were. Thanks for calling that out. It's the only thing where I was like, nobody will notice this 3M double-sided taped hook on here. It'll just blend in with the white now.
That's all right. First, I thought it was like a white peeps that was like just stuck on the wall. And I was like, oh, no, that's just the hook. That's it. Yeah.
Like, I'm trying to be like, I just need something like white, just a solid color behind me. And you're like, okay, make sure. Let me get in frame. Best dad ever. thing over here. This is just my award that my kids gave me. Not to brag, but I have children and they think that I am the best because I am the best dad ever.
That's how it goes. Yeah.
Which, by the way, how old are your kids now? Funny.
So my son is 6. He'll be 7 in like a month and a half.
Oh, happy early birthday.
He's born ahead of March. Oh, yeah, 2 months. So
his birthday guess is him listening to your episode of this podcast.
He does. He used to really like, because it would be like, daddy's going to go tell jokes. He's like, oh, okay. And like, I used to wear like silly, funny button ups and he started wanting those and everything. And now I'm like, he's like, daddy, can we play football? I'm like, sorry, bud, I got to go, do this, or I got to go tell jokes. And he's like, oh, okay. So yeah, it's starting to try, and that's always a tough balance, like trying to balance, like taking time away from him and stuff like that and everything. But no, he likes it. He has his own little joke books. And he actually, this past summer, he actually did a show. It was like a kids say the darndest thing kind of set up. And so he went up and he did like a little 3-minute set and he got paid $5 and everything, got pictures with it. And I actually co-hosted it. It was a cool moment. Like I was essentially hosting for my son. And I did not get paid that day, but he did. So I was just like, nope, this is exactly how comedy should be working. So yeah.
This checks out. This is basically been my entire career right now, doing the work and someone else getting paid.
Yep. Younger comics just stepping over me one by one. That's all it is.
So are you worried that your son's going to be like, because kids rebel. Are you worried his rebellion's like, I'm going to get into weightlifting and football because my dad wasn't there for cash. He was too busy going out being a clown.
I mean, if it ends up him getting a pro career, pro football players can play pretty good. So maybe that's the long game that we're working out here. So no, I don't think so. Not too much. I mean, he's kind of into everything. We joke like, you always try to figure out what your kid's going to be. We're like, is he going to be an artsy kid? Or is he going to be, is he going to have friends? Is he going to be a sports kid? And I think he's just going to be one of those, like, little bit of everything. So that's kind of how I was growing up as well. So, but, you never know.
Yeah. On the subject of fatherhood and having your responsibilities to the family, does working school hours, is that conducive to having a good family life? Because a friend of mine one of the radio jockeys I used to work with, who got me my job in Boston, Jackson Blue. One of the things that was beneficial to him working in the, when we did morning radio together, was that he was there to pick up his daughters after school,
Mm-hmm.
Then of course, when he moves to Boston, he starts doing nights. So the had to flip his schedule around to where, all right, now I wake up my daughters, I take them to school, I pick up school, and then I go to work. And he was basically the primary, and you can go back and listen to the episode of him talk about it with, you know, my episode of the podcast, and where he talked specifically about his radio hours are so, he's lucky that his radio hours have been so conducive to make him the primary caretaker of his kids. Cause his wife is an oncology nurse. Like, she works in the cancer ward of a hospital. So she's working, you know, 5, 12-hour, 16-hour days in the cancer ward and stuff like that. So he's got to be, you know, between him and, you know, family and babysitters, but he's the ones that his kids primarily see, but that's due to his hours. Do your hours, your school hours, are they conducive? Or is it like, hey, I go in before the kids wake up, I come out, and they're eating dinner, day's over with. Cause I had to help Johnny Swarzy learn how to read, even though he's in the 10th grade. And how have you not figured out sentences and just a simple numbering system to find the freaking book that I, look, I went to college and I got the book and I understood the Dewey Decimal System. You just need to follow the card, Johnny. All right. Did I just do a lot of projecting for you?
No, just a little. Just a little. No, but it actually works out great. So he actually, so I work on a campus where they have literally everything from daycare up through like graduating high school. And so he's been going there since he was literally 6 weeks old. So I have him right there on campus with me. My wife, she actually will take him though in the morning, drops him off, and then I pick him up every day. So it's kind of nice. We each get to kind of take part in that, and it works out great for both of us because usually by the time that we get home, my wife, she's wrapping up with work. She works remotely from home. So just kind of, it kind of works out perfect for us, but yeah, I mean, it, yeah, I mean, it's definitely,
I love it that she works remotely from home. Can't be bothered to watch the kid in the house. Well, let me say this. Cause like during the whole pandemic thing, and now granted Zoom teaching is not homeschooling, but that whole, like, see, the thing that seemed hypocritical to me was the amount of people that are like, hey, kids need to go back to school. But at the same time, it's like, yeah, but I want to still keep working from home. It's better for me to work from home, but the kids learn better in school. It's like, I feel like there's a hypocrisy in that thinking. Like, shouldn't people also socialize in face-to-face? No, you want your kids to go back to school so you don't have to watch them. You want to work from home so you don't actually do any work at your job. You want to work in your PJs and watch Golden Girls all day and then spend 10 minutes following your reports. That's what you want. Let's be honest. I think, I don't know. Neither of us work in corporate
America. I can see a lot of people doing that. I know definitely. Cause in just in the slim chance that my wife listens to this, she's not going to,
she is a supporting wife.
She's working right now. Like, she works crazy hours. But yeah, I mean, it was definitely so we've been lucky enough to sort of move into a situation where we used to be in like a 2-bedroom apartment, and like essentially like her office, my office was like in the living room area. So that was always like a bit of contention, especially when it was at the point where he was home with us. That was always really tough. But now we're in a 3-bedroom. So like, this is a designated office. Like, the part that I have on the screen, that's like my walls. Everything else is off. Like, this is her office. Like, I had to sign a sheet to get in here, and there's any time, because she's just like, I think she's working in bed right now, but like, she works crazy hours. So she's one of those people that, I don't know, like, it doesn't really matter where she is. She's like just killing it. But again, go back to the whole thing with my son. Yeah, I mean, it works out great for us, like teaching. And so I've been teaching for 15 years now. And I know, hold the applause, people. I know. I have, one of my favorite things is when I do it stand up now is I'll tell people, I do that thing where we all do, where you say something that you like expect people to do the applause break. So you pause and I'm like, oh, I've been teaching for 15 years. And I always think, I was like, what do I do when nobody says anything? I'm like, oh, okay, I guess the pandemic's officially over now. We're not heroes anymore. So yeah, and that always gets a little bit of a chuckle.
Yeah, but, well, at least you wrote the joke for that. Like, that's my problem with comedians is the ones who are expecting to laugh, they don't get it. And then you can see that they're trying to fumble their way to figure something out to make them,
most people clap. You can laugh.
Yeah.
That's my favorite one is, you guys are allowed to laugh. And we're all like, we would.
if it was funny.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
I'm in the middle of trying to do it. Wow, I can't believe I'm going to say this out loud. I'm going to say it out to hold myself to it. I'm in the middle of trying to do a TikTok. And by do, I mean just walk. Dude, I can't. Oh, I don't know how people do front-facing camera TikToks. I don't do it. It feels so douchey. But I want to do one just because of an open mic the other night where I go to. It's like, hey, male comedians, you know, when you're doing an observational humor joke and there's a subject in the joke, it doesn't always have to be a woman that you're making fun of. Like, this is a genderless joke. The butt of it doesn't always have to be a woman. You know, like, maybe just make fun of a guy every once in a while. I've seen so many comedians that, like, everything was just some woman came in here and then I told this woman that. And it's like mm-hmm. none of these characters had to be women. And I'm not to sound woke, but I'll tell you this honestly. I had a joke where I flopped the gender and it did better. And it didn't matter. It was a dumb, nonsensical joke. It was literally, the joke is, you know, in my act that I, my diet plan is exercising after eating. So I eat a whole bunch of food and I get up and I run as fast as I can out of the restaurant. Right. And then the follow-up line is, and I keep running until the waiter gives up chasing me. And it was originally written as until the waitress gives up chasing me and no one laughed until I switched it to waiter. And they laugh every time now. Maybe it's anecdotal. Yeah. Maybe it's a coincidence. Or maybe certain genders you just put in associate with things are good and some are bad. And you know what? I didn't want to make people feel bad about them thinking me running out and stiffing, dining and dashing and stiffing tip on a probably a high school dropout who got knocked up when she was young. And now she's working at a diner to try and make ends meet. But a whole bunch of crumpled up ones at the end of the day really isn't paying her bills.
Yeah.
That was a very specific image.
No, I was going to say that got very specific. That has happened to you. Were you her? Were you the lady? No, definitely.
Let's circle back because this is where we got talking the other night. And I know we're going to have to do that. I'm just going to call it out. We're going to recreate a conversation we had in real life. Is that to me, I didn't know that you had to be certified to be a teacher. I just thought you went to school, applied, and then that's it. I didn't realize, like, I mean, like, background checks. All right, cool. But I didn't realize you had to take a test to be able to qualify to give tests.
Yeah. I mean, in the state of Maryland, there's like, as part of your certification to start out, you have to pass something called the Praxis exam, which is essentially like, think like the SAT or just like something like that, where it's a specific area. So for me, I was originally going to be a high school history teacher. So I had to take an exam about secondary education. So it's, which is like fifth grade through 12th grade. And then a specific area, which for me was history. And that included, or not history, social science. And that, so that included everything from world history, US history, geography, like all of these things. And so like, so the idea of US history, they 20 questions on all of US history. And you're like, okay, I guess I could probably do that. But then it's 20 questions on world history, the history of the world.
In not the Mel Brooks film.
Yeah. And that's what it is. And it's crazy, but yeah, that's what you got to do. You got to show that you have the knowledge and then you can start teaching. And then in order to continue to teach, you have to I think it's like 6 college credit at like be at like postgraduate credit hours in your first 5 years and then 30 credits or a master's equivalent by year 10. And that's so you can, you know, the whole idea of keeping up with what's going on. But there's all different things like the Maryland State Department of Education, MSDE, they do things where you can go to like, go to this training and you can get 3 credit hours or, you know, go to this professional development for a whole day and you can get 6. So there's like other ways to go about it other than just getting your master's. But, you know, that's if you, I mean, that's public school. So I'm in private school now. So depending on where you go to private school, some private schools are like, you don't need to be certified. So like right now, my certification lapsed like 3 years ago. So I can't, if I want to go back to public school, then I got to go through a whole process. I don't even know what that is. I don't even want to think about what that is, but yeah, but like you said, but you don't have to. There's certain districts where they're just like, they're so desperate for teachers. They're like, do you want to, you're hired like that. Or we had talked about before. There's some that said like, you know, military service, like if you had X amount of military service that surpassed all of that, you can start teaching. You have your accreditation, you're good to go. And then there's places where they give programs where like somebody like yourself, you'd be like, I want to teach, you know, art, or I want to teach music, or I want to teach history. And they were like, okay, we'll start you out, but you have to essentially from day one start taking these classes and show that you're working towards the degree that most people had to used to get just started, because they're so many people are leaving teaching.
Yeah, it's, and of course, like, Baltimore City crazy. Would take military service as a reason, as an acceptable accreditation to be a teacher, because they're already used to getting shot at anyway.
That's a funny thing. Like, we come off as like people that haven't worked in public school. You're like, what? Like, job quality from the military translates. I'm like, there's a bunch. There's a bunch of things that transfer over. I won't give specifics because I don't know where I'm going to be applying for a job in the future. And I want to keep my prospects
on that subject.
Open. But
is there any hope of going back to being a history teacher?
No, not at this point. I, like I said, I love the idea of doing library because you get to do a little bit of everything. And my memory is also horrible when it comes to just like trivial facts. Like, there's something to just get at or just like cemented into my brain. But then there's other things of like, I'm just, it's in and out, one ear and the other. And history, in order to talk about it and really teach it, it's not that you just have to remember all those facts, but how those things connect. And so, and like, when I see people do it really well, I'm just like in awe of that. And I think a big part of that is the fact that I've had, and this might be a whole other thing, but I've had, I always forget if it's 7 or 8 concussions. In my life,
if you can't remember how many concussions you had, that's because you've had concussions. Like,
yes, it's either 7 or 8. If I start listing them out, I can remember, but I think it might be 8. That
how
I've
are you
had,
having
and all of them are.
Is it from books falling off the shelf in the library?
No. Ironically, when I worked at Costco, I had a refrigerator fall off of a pallet onto my head and wedge it between one of those metal things. That's how I got. I think that was number 7. That I got that one, but no, I. The only time I got one teaching was I used to teach at a special needs school, and I was helping a student. One of his coping like mechanisms was he would get one of those yoga balls, and he was only like 5, and he would lay on it and you would kind of rock him back and forth to calm him down. And then when I thought he was done, he just all of a sudden he's like took off and just like Superman jumped through the air, headbutted me right there. I was out cold. So, and of course, literally my wife was out of town. We didn't have our son at that time, but she was out of town for work. So I literally had to call my mom and dad, be like, mom and dad, can you come pick me up? Because I can't drive and I don't want to call an ambulance to come get me and everything like that. And then of course they're watching my nephew who he at the time was 6. So he tells my brother, and then my brother's like, I heard you got knocked out by a kindergartner. And I'm like, well, yeah, but it's not like that. Like, like I didn't get to fight with him and lose. Like,
look, it wasn't Library Fight Club, okay? This kid zoomed off a ball at me.
Wasn't, because as we all know, the first rule of Library Fight Club is you don't talk about Library Fight Club. It would have been better joking, like, the first rule of Library Fight Club is, shh. now I gotta try that out on stage. So
we're going to see who's going to get to do this joke first. Either you're going to get to do it on a stage first, or it's going to be in my TikToks promoting this episode.
There you go. That's fine. Because it's still me doing
it. I timestamped it. I wrote it down.
Nice. That's awesome.
The funny thing about history is the regular listeners of the show know I'm, right now, and I don't know if I told you, but I'm on a 3-month sabbatical from work because we don't work during the winter. My new job is I work for Boston Duck Tours. I'm a comedic historic tour guide of Boston. And I fucking hate history and Boston. This is the worst job for me. But it's literally, I get to do an 80-minute comedy history tour around Boston. I'm personally proud of how far I've come with it because, I don't like history. The only reason I haven't been doing this job for the longest time is because I don't care about that kind of historic stuff. Like, there's the Customs House in Boston. They have a view of the city, and I went up to take so I can recommend it to people. And I was like, I'm never recommending this to anybody. It's just a view of buildings. What the fuck? The only reason to come up here is to see the condors when they lay their eggs, and they only do that for 2 months a year. So, like, why would I tell anybody to do this? It books 6 weeks in advance. Why would I tell any tourists to do this while they're in town? This is wasteful and dumb. Oh, look, gray concrete buildings. Wow. Everyone else loves the view. I don't get it. Like, I like the view on top of a mountain when I can see trees and plants and distance and stuff. But sitting on top of a city, just looking at other buildings, just same building I was seeing from the ground, just from this angle.
Yep.
But
new elevation.
Yeah. Yep. So it's like I had to learn so much of the history and what I will never know the history the way these other guys do. Like, they know the history. I memorized the history to write jokes. That's literally all I did. Like, I had to, one of my big gags is I talk about how much better, why can't I think of the guy's name? Oh my God. This is the problem with the 3 month thing is that you lose 3 months of not doing your tours. You lose your entire tour. William Dawes.
That was what I was going to say. Yeah. So I'm glad you saved me.
Yeah.
Now I'm not embarrassed.
Yeah. Cause I talk about how much better William Dawes is compared to Paul Revere. Cause everyone loves Paul Revere. They all want to talk about Paul Revere, and my dumb comedian, anti-establishment punk rock brain is like, I don't want to talk about how great Paul Revere. Paul Revere's the Elon Musk of the revolution. I want to talk about William Dawes. William Dawes did everything Paul Revere did. He just did better, faster, and longer. William Dawes should be the name of his autobiography. All right, he can't write it. He's dead. But anyway, so it's like that's the thing. Like, so when I do my gags about William Dawes, one of the other tour guides is like, how is he better? Like, Paul Revere did this, and this. And I'm like, well, he did this and this. Like, well, how? And I was like, all right, look, I don't really know the specifics. I just know this little bit of information that I'm holding all of this on. Like, I can't do an actual literal debate with you, Frim Jolly. All right, Frim, leave me alone. Let me have my little gag about William Dawes.
Like a very small segment of this country of people that have visited Boston are like, Paul Revere's a punk, man. Y'all don't know. You don't know the truth, man. You're just out there. Just like,
Look, you know what? Paul Revere borrowed a horse for his midnight ride. William Dawes had horse owning money. That's all I'm saying. He owned his horse. By the way, that horse, that borrowed horse that Paul Revere used, right? That he borrowed, was confiscated by the British. So you know what? He never even got the deposit for his horse back. So you know what? Maybe he's not so great. But that's the thing about history is that, like, I'm falling in love with certain aspects of Boston and American history and stuff like that. But I'm just like so dumb. Still, like, to the point where I was like, look, I, like, some people will talk to me afterwards about, like, oh, this, that, and they'll, like, when I expand more in stories, I'm like, I told you everything I know about that subject. Yeah. Like, you heard it for 14 seconds on the duck boat. I got nothing else.
All I'm thinking of is that scene in Park and Rec when they're in D.C. and Andy starts saying the, like, stupid facts, and then, oh my goodness, what is the Aubrey Plaza's character? Why can't I think of her name? Andy's wife.
So Chris Pratt's character is Andy.
Yeah.
I didn't watch a lot of Parks and Recs to my own chagrin.
But essentially, she's just like, everybody, come here. This is a world class tour, $50. And he's like, that is the White House because it is America's whitest house. Like, stuff like that. Like, just stupid stuff that doesn't work. Or what was that in Happy Endings? They were doing just this stupid, like, gag of, like, somebody that doesn't really know, but it's, like, funny. And you just have to be charismatic and, like, have a lot of
confidence.
And people are like, nope, that's right. I believe it.
I heard that.
I remember that. Yeah, all the dads were like, yeah, that's true. That's true.
That checks
100%
out. 100% true. Well, do you still dig history? Like, on your vacations, do you, like, cause I feel like, right, that's what I'm supposed to be doing. Like, when I take since I've joined Boston Duck Tours, I did two comedy tours, and I felt like I needed to do touristy things to compare tourism, but also at the same time, I felt like I needed to learn some kind of history of that area. Like, I was doing a bayou tour through the swamps of Louisiana, and literally writing down notes of, like, historic Louisiana, New Orleans things.
Yep.
And the only thing that I honestly even remember is that, hey, there's a big castle that was built over there because we were trying to impress Disney to bring it here. That was like, there's a really old cemetery. That's about all I took out of it.
So I'm sure you've seen, like, Band of Brothers, the Pacific, those, like, World War II, like, not documentaries, but just like shows on HBO and everything. Shout out Tom Hanks. Hey, bud. Does Tom Hanks subscribe here? Because that would be great if you could get me in contact with him.
I think the only way to get a hold of Tom Hanks is you have to send him a letter from an actual typewriter.
Oh, nice, nice, nice. Or send him a new volleyball, because I heard he was upset about the one he last lost. Last time. Anyway, no, so you said about history. So the Pacific, Band of Brothers, so those obviously all started as books, like essentially telling the stories of people that actually went through the war in World War II. And one of my favorite things about looking back at history is like those personal narratives, not like the textbook version of like, this is what happened, but the individual stories that can really give you more insight into not just what happened, but like what it was actually like for those people. And so literally one of my top five favorite books is this one. It's called With the Old Breed. So it's written by Eugene Sledge, who was one of the main characters. That's if you look on the back there, that was the character that he played in the Pacific. He was the guy in the beginning, he had a heart murmur and couldn't go, and then ends up going later. And then has to go through like horrible, horrible stuff that Peleliu and I think it was Okinawa, I think is where he was, where he did a lot of his fighting. But it's just, it's amazing reading people's like just unedited, like this is what it was like for an individual person going through. And so what I started doing is going back to like the Pacific and Band of Brothers and finding all of those, like every one of the main characters in each of those that survived the war, like they all have a memoir. And so I just started reading all of those and just like digesting all that, and just gave me a new appreciation of especially like all of the people in World War II. And it just sort of changes your idea when you hear these things. Like right now I'm really big into like the history of like air warfare and everything. And just when you hear statistics, like, I don't know, like there would be a battle and they're like 100,000 soldiers were captured. And you're just like, oh, okay, that's a number. But then when you start like looking at it more on an individual level, it just changes the way you look at things and think about things. And it's really cool, which they just started on Apple TV. I think it's Masters of the Air is like another like Pacific Band of Brothers type show, but it's all about the air warfare. So I'm like super nerding out with that and everything. But yeah.
Well, you've reached peak middle age dad that you're now going through all of World War II.
Looking for. Yeah. Well, Quiet on the Western Front on Netflix. Oh my God. That was so like, I don't know if you, did you see that? Did you see All Quiet on the Western Front?
No, I know nothing about it. I will tell you a good history recommendation. Finish. Tell me about the Netflix show, but I'm going to give you a good World War II recommendation.
Yeah, no, it's just, it's again, it's that idea of you're looking from that localized individual level of what it's like experiencing what war is like. And I mean, that like the battle scenes that they remake of World War One are, it's incredible. Again, it just like, you think how, like the whole thing starts off the idea, you see a guy die, and then his body gets put in a pile and they take his clothes off. And this, it's the story of like his shirt being taken back to a place. They wash it, they clean it, they sew it up, and then they give it to the next kid in line. And the guy's name is like inside. He goes, oh, this is somebody else's. And they're like, oh, no, that was a mistake. They just rip it out. And then you zoom out and you see on the floor, there's like all these tags. And you're just like, oh, all these new soldiers are just in the uniforms of all the guys that just died like a week ago. And you're just like, holy crap. Like, it's just little things like that that just change everything of, for at least for me, how I think of
what
when I
is the
like,
cleaning solution the military from World War II is using that gets all of those bloodstains out. I need to know. Is it vinegar? Is it OxyClean?
They're just like, you see a woman with like a big wooden spoon and like a tub and she's like moving it around. And I don't know. Nobody realized it at the time except for the people that were actually doing it. But yeah, that's like, it's crazy. It's crazy. But yeah. I come from a military family as well. My dad served in Vietnam. My brother, this is the other joke I do whenever I am like military shows. They're like military feel is that, you know, I come from a military family. My dad, he volunteered for the Army and fought in Vietnam. And then, my brother, he graduated from the Naval Academy. So he thinks he's better than everybody else. And military people usually get a kick out of that one because I think Navy always gets kind of, you know, made fun of a little bit more in the row or hierarchy of our armed forces and everything.
Well, but, the only person that gets made more fun of than the Navy is the Air Force. So,
That's for sure.
Speaking of military family, I come from a family of draft dodgers, and by that I mean my dad went to jail for selling drugs during Korea, so that's how he got out of military service. I mean, he keeps telling us that he was lucky he didn't get drafted. I'm like, arrest records are public information, Dad, right? Like,
that's crazy. Yeah, my dad is that. This is not like my dad's better than your dad at all. I'm not trying to go that route, but like, my dad was literally like volunteered before his number was called, and like at that time, it's again, there's all these things you don't realize. Like, so my dad was the last surviving son in his family's lineage. And so there was a thing where you could defer to go. Essentially, they're saying like, we're not going to send you because if you die, your family lineage ends, like it can't continue. But he like waived that to go anyway. And so, which is crazy. But again, like, he doesn't talk about it that much, which I do not blame him. I'd say in probably the last like 5-10 years, like, you start to piece little stories here and there. But after he starts talking too much about it, he kind of like shuts it off and everything, which again, I can only imagine stuff that he went through that he's still, 50 years later, unable to talk about and everything. But it's crazy.
Your dad did that, and my dad sold him the pot he smoked when he come back from leave.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know.
Look, they're both heroes, okay? They're both heroes.
Yeah, they're both heroes in their own way. Different ways, but their own way.
So are you familiar with Operation Mincemeat?
100%. Yeah, the newest one of that is, yeah.
Yeah, well, there's that, the Netflix show, but I'll tell you what's better than that is there's a podcast called World's Greatest Con, hosted by Brian Brushwood. First season is about Operation Mincemeat and just the narrative of this podcast that he strings together. He was a full-time traveling magician, the weird ones.
I just did a show with a bunch of magicians, so I love magicians.
Yeah, and he is a full-time circus sideshow performer and magician that started a YouTube show about how to scam people into giving you free beers. That's basically the entire point of the program. Is called Scam School.
That's
and they
awesome.
Also have this podcast talk, World's Greatest Con, the first season about Operation Mincemeat. And he correlates Operation Mincemeat to the time he got tricked into buying stolen stereos from a guy in a parking lot and how he thinks he made out on the deal. Like, it's really well, brilliantly written, like the way he does it. I highly recommend World's Greatest Con as a podcast, and then listen to.
I definitely am going to have to check that out for sure.
Yeah. I knew nothing about Mincemeat before that. And I was like, oh, this is the greatest. Like, the way I sell it to people is like, it is the story of how the Allied forces swindled Adolf Hitler into losing World War II with a properly placed dead body. And people are like, whoa, what? And then somebody called it a true crime podcast. I'm like, that's not true crime. It's war. Stop. There's no such thing as true crime. It's just called crime. Like, stop.
Yeah. I mean, there's a reason why all those stories, like those, all those individual stories do so well when from like a just theatrical standpoint of like in the movies is because it, it changes the way you look at those things. Like, it changes the way you look at history and all the, like, I had no knowledge of that aspect of like, I'm just always like, there was Normandy and they stormed the beaches. And then like, you start to learn, you're like, oh, there was so much going on years before that and how it got to that point and how, again, like just this particular operation, if this hadn't happened, Normandy would have been a completely different thing. And it's crazy.
Yeah, I really crazy. Do dig, like, learn. I did dig learning all the small little things that built up to the American Revolutionary War. Like, just these little incidents that started getting people on their side. Like, look, the murder of Christopher Sider was, a lover of a boy that was killed by a British soldier. And the funeral happened days before here it is again. Why is my brain blanking? March 5th, 1770 was the. I'm getting fired next year. They're going to fire me right now by listening to this podcast. not the Boston Tea Party, because that was December of 1773, but on March 5th, 1770, was the Boston Massacre. There it is. Hi there. Hi there. Ho there. Like, I'm picturing the intersection where the
Boston
Massacre.
That's what I was
Massacre.
Thinking.
I love how everybody, you just watch me struggle. There's like, you just watch me struggle sitting there. It's like, yeah, that's what I was thinking you were going to say.
No, I'm just getting really close to my screen because I was also Googling it to make sure before I said it that I wasn't wrong. So
But yeah, like the reason the Boston Massacre even occurred was because tensions were already up high because of the recent death parade of Christopher Sider. By the way, I'm proving to be the worst in everything right now. In all my history, I got to move out of Dundalk and get back to Boston. Apparently, there's something here that keeps me as a loser. No, I'm a loser in Boston too because I'm a 42-year-old guy with two roommates. Anyway, but like during this thing, I've blanked out three times on things that I'm supposed to know by heart, and now the professional radio expert just banged his microphone. But so for you though, Aaron, my favorite thing was like I don't vision board. I don't do resolutions. I don't do any real voodoo manifesting kind of bullshit that some people come up. Mm-hmm. But I am a firm believer in you should have a plan. And I loved the other night when we were talking about your expected plan to increase your stand-up comedy career. And I would love because you were talking about your wife. Is in corporate business. And if you don't want to talk about your family's finances or stuff like that, but I think it was a brilliant, brilliant idea that I would love you to share with people.
Oh yeah. No, this is, I've talked to enough people about it. So my wife works for a tech company and, the hope is that one day, someday soon that her company will, you know, be purchased by someone else. And so her time there and stock that she has accumulated while working there will then turn into, I don't want to say a fortune, but, you know, will help our family financially. I don't know if there's a better way of saying that, but I told her that if that, you know, amount that we're, that she's able to make off of that, it's a certain number that I'll be able to, you know, essentially take like a sabbatical from work for a year and just try full-time stand-up. Because right now that's not an option for me. You know, my work ties into where my son goes to school and, you know, my wife was a teacher for a long time before she got into ed tech. And so, you know, we're not raking in the big bucks by any means. But you know, if we got a huge financial influx because of the sell of her company and where she's at and everything, you know,
well, if this one here,
I would do that.
Sit around fantasizing about it. You've made the plans. Look, my fantasy plans is going on the Tonight Show and telling my life story to Jimmy Kimmel or to Jimmy Fallon or Conan O'Brien or somebody being invited on a late night talk show. Like that's why I
fantasy. Two big lofty goals is this. So one of my
I want to hear these goals. These fantasies. Like what's the day to day fantasy?
Is the number one, the biggest? Well, the number one that I feel like because I've seen it happen to fellow comedians recently. Is obtainable is the idea that my number one favorite comedian is Brian Regan. He's the first ever comedian I saw live. I got to see him at the Baltimore Improv, which doesn't exist anymore. I could sit right next to the stage and just see him in his full, like, I felt like when he was in his absolute prime, like he is still a master of what he does, but it was before everybody knew who he was, before like he was, for anybody that knows comedy, they know who he is. And, my goal is like, I would just love to open for him at some point in time. And so a couple years ago, he came here to Baltimore. He performed in Magoobies and a really good comedian friend of mine, Chris Lawrence, shout out Ellicott Silly Comedy Festival. They do great shows and he's another great dad. You may have been to a show and thought you saw me and it might've been him because we look very similar. He's also a dad comic as well. And Chris got to open for him because Chris does, he could do clean comedy and he had good relations with Magoobies and they asked him, I'm like, and it was that moment I was like, oh, I think that could actually happen. Like there's a lot of things that would have to align. Like Ron Reed would have to come back. The owner of Magoobies would have to be aware of me, which I think he is. and would need someone, which he probably won't because he has a million, he could ask anybody and anybody would take that gig. But there's a situation where I've seen it, like I'm close to that actually happen. So that's like that's 1A goal or 1B goal. But 1A is to go on The Tonight Show with Jimmy Fallon for two reasons. One, because that would be an amazing dream to just go in there and perform. That would be historic for me, because I think for the longest time, going on The Tonight Show, whether it was Carson or Letterman, like that was the mecca of stand-up. And I'm a big historian with stand-up comedy. And that still, to me, would be like, if you did this thing that so many of the icons of the past have done, like you get connected to them forever in some way. But also, Jimmy Fallon is in my wife's top five, which if you're familiar with the Friends franchise, you know what that means. and so the that's what pass. I told her. I was like, exactly. And I said, you know, I want to try this stand-up thing. And I said, you know, if I ever get big enough, that's going to be my goal. So we can both, you know, live the dream. So she can meet him and shoot her shot.
If you get that sabbatical, do you pull the kid out of school and do you homeschool? Do you could become the homeschool teaching dad? Because not, like, hey, I'm going to be home all day. I have to do something to make my wife realize that this was a good decision for the family.
I haven't thought about that at all, about making it good. Okay. For the wife. It's I'm just fully like, no, it's just all about me in that moment for a year. That's it. All in, whatever that means. If it's traveling here, moving somewhere, I don't know what it'll mean, but
see, my fantasy has always been, you know, meeting a wealthy surgeon, woman surgeon, they don't like to be called woman surgeons, at a bar somewhere, and then accidentally knocking up and then being forced to be the stay-at-home dad for them. And then I get to do my comedy at night. And she's just very understanding. That is my life plan. That is my retirement plan right there, because that even sounds more attainable than winning the lottery.
My wife wins a lot, makes a lot of money, and then I get to travel across the country featuring. Middling for, which is the dream. That's my dream.
Like, that's $75 a night. Like,
headline the Quebec. Like, I don't know. I'm going to headline everywhere. Like, no, I'll just feature. That'll be fine. You know?
All right. Oh my goodness. Aaron, tell everyone, where they can find you and the shows you produce in the Baltimore area.
Yeah. So, my website's easy. It's just Aaron Patrick Comedy. And the only confusing part is my name is Erin. I don't know if you're watching the feed. There we go. Down there. That is not a typo. That is correct. My mom likes to tell people she spelled it Erin because we're Irish. And my dad loves to point out the fact that it's because my mom really, really still to this day wants a girl. I am one of three boys and she's like, no, it's because we're Irish. I'm like, sure. That, you know, really went well for me in middle school. That was great. every time I get solicitors calling asking to speak to Miss Aaron, I'm like, no, it's Mr. Or mail delivered to me. It's always addressed to Miss Aaron. When Obama got first term inaugurated, I had my students write to him and the White House wrote us back and was really excited. And then it was addressed to Miss Aaron. I was like, I'm not voting for him second term. Which I'm not afraid to say that I did not vote for him second term, for that alone. No, I was in that part of my life where I'm like, I'm going to vote for the Green Party. Which that was dumb. But anyway, that's all.
Look, he was a lock for the second term. You could have played around with your vote a little 100%. Bit. It was fine.
I was just like, let me help build up. Cause I'm big, like, you know, we need another party. A two-party system is what's wrong with everything. And I'm like, let me help push the third party, you know, narrative. And no, that was dumb. But anyway.
We're never going to get out of that two-party system, because when we're pitting the two of them against each other constantly, we can't have a third option.
Yeah. Doesn't matter. We're either or society. I mean, not to go to a completely different thing, but like I do therapy and I've realized that the biggest thing in my life, one of the biggest things to get over is the fact that, like, I make everything either or. So it's like I had a good day or a bad day, or had a good set or a bad set, and realizing there's this like middle area. And then I'm like, it's good or bad or okay. And then it's like, there's a whole thing.
Spectrum in between, right?
Yeah. It took me 30
good and bad
years
days are on a spectrum, just like gender.
Yeah. And it took me 36, 37 years. And a year of therapy to realize that. And I wish I would have realized that a lot younger. But I think that's, again, with the whole political thing, it's just that's a big reason why we're, but, so I have my website, AaronPatrickComedy.com, and then you can find me on, Instagram at AaronPatrickComedy as well. Same thing, E-R-I-N, Patrick Comedy.
Awesome. And I'm going to let you go because we are both two middle-aged men, which means the only way for us to get enough time away from the family to podcast is at 10 o'clock at night.
I appreciate it because I now have to go at, what is it, like 10:30 at night, I think, right now, and figure out what we're going to do because my wife and I just forgot that my son doesn't have school tomorrow, but we both have work. So it's like teacher conferences, and I'm like, I don't know what we're going to do. And I was like, do I take a half day? She's like, we'll talk about it later, which, you know, that's always a good idea when you make decisions like that at 10:30 at night, less than 8 hours from when the repercussions of them take hold.
The last thing you want to do is on his professional development day when he's not supposed to be at school, take him to school with you. Just sit there.
That's 10 times worse.
Like, he'd rather go to class than sit at you in the library. You just listen to Zoom conferences.
100%. Yeah. You had mentioned, I used to have a show called, right here on the mug, One More Dad Joke. I tried it out on a virtual platform, Plausible. I don't know if you're familiar with that. They do a lot of virtual comedy shows, which is still a thing. Just because, you know, that's convenient for me to do that during the week. So that'll be on there, I believe, probably next couple months as well. And then I also produce another show called Laughs at the Mill. It's in Moncton, Maryland. It's a really cool spot. It's speaking of American Revolutionary War Mill. That they have refurbished and restructured, and they turn it into this like art education hall. And so every couple of months we get to do a comedy show there, which is really, really cool. So I'll be doing that. And then just out and about around, you know, the DMV, you know, doing shows where I can with whomever I can. Like I said, I did a show with, a magician, a juggler, this guy did cardistry, and then I did stand-up comedy at a restaurant, which seconds as the North Carroll High School Athletic Hall of Fame. So that was,
superlatives to that place.
Yes. Yeah. Which is funny because I spent half of my routine just talking about how, you know, like my high school has a Hall of Fame at a bar too, but it's just a bunch of us pretending we actually did stuff in sports in high school. I was like, you remember the game? We were like, yeah. But it wasn't anything special. And then I just talked about my experiences at Little League, which was a lot of repressed memories. Like the fact that the only compliment I got as a kid was good eye, which is ironic because I'm legally blind in my left eye. So I just grew up thinking that whenever somebody heard good eye, that also meant that they were legally blind in their left eye.
And hey, you got that good correlate. One. Remember, you got the good one.
I said Brian Regan, his whole Little League bit. It was just like, that was me, right field, right here. Like, I only got two hits, and I, in my whole Little League career, I had a batting average of 0.006. And the only reason I know that is because my dad will continually remind me of that fact. And so that was, just fun reliving that kind of stuff. So that's right. Pretty much me.
Dude, it was great because, we are pandemic friends. Because we met during the pandemic, because I love to say, I don't think any of my other trips to Baltimore since the pandemic, we crossed paths. I think this is the trip. And it was like, it's nice to know that you are exactly as tall as I assumed you were based on the Zoom box. Because a lot of people, they're deceivedly tall. Some are deceivedly short. When I looked at it, I was like, that's about the right height for a laptop sitting on a desk. Like he is... His height is accurate.
Yeah, 6'1". Well, I mean, 6 3/4, but it says 6'1" everywhere else.
You're not on Tinder. You don't have to round up. You can be honest. It's fine.
Yeah.
You have the wife, all right, already? You don't have to deal with lying about your height. It's okay. You don't have to round up. I'm 5'6", and I round up to 5'10". So it's a necessity in my life. Anyway, but thank you for so much for coming on. And I love that we were able, like, I've known you were a teacher, but I didn't know the specifics of it. Is a job that is different all the way around. Like every person you talk to that is a teacher, you have related stories, but also a completely different one. So I'm glad that you shared it with me.
Oh, yeah. This one. So 100%. Thanks a lot. Yeah. And I'm every teacher has, you know, the stories that you go through. Like I tell people all the time, like my craziest one was, and I finished up here with this is, I worked at a school. I was a librarian I got hired on a Friday. I show up on Monday. And I said, can you guys take me to the library? And they're like, oh, we don't have a library. I was like, I'm the librarian. And they were like, oh, they got you, huh? Yeah, they got me. I never would have thought to ask in the interview to be a librarian. By the way, do you guys have a library? Because they didn't. But that school doesn't exist anymore. So I don't know. I don't know. I don't want to say it all worked out because that sounds mean. Again, I don't know where I'm going to be interviewing in the next 10, 20 years. So I'll keep my mouth shut of where that was and what district it was.
But we know where you won't be interviewing, and that's schools that don't have libraries.
There you go. That is for sure. That is my first question in every interview now. Yeah, I'm like, do you have a library? And they're like, sir, this is a Bennigan's. But anyway. Do you still have Bennigan's? Do those exist? I feel like that much.
Do you have a library here? We have a cart.
That's what happened to me. Yeah, I got stuck with a cart where I got to bring in my own books. That was fun. So we did watch The Pagemaster several times. I don't know if that's an old throwback for you, that movie, The Pagemaster.
No, I don't know what that is. But
I'm trying to hit as many demographics as I can. I got old dads that like World War II. I got random white guys who remember The Pagemaster. It starred a cartoon version of Macaulay Culkin.
I don't know this. The closest I got to library shows growing up was Ghost Rider on PBS.
Nice. There you go.
Wait, was Pagemaster, was that the one with the dog that would read books and go back in time? Is that? No, that's Wishbone.
No, that was the one where the kid, he got stuck in the library, got pulled into this like cartoon world, and his like sidekicks are different books and different genres, and he has to like survive each genre, like the horror genre and adventure. He's like a pirate and he like almost gets murdered as like a cartoon. And then he goes to like the horror section where he almost gets murdered. Like that's essentially the thing is Macaulay Culkin was really good in movies where he almost got murdered. That was just his wheelhouse.
This sounds like a 90s bad reboot of Time Bandits is what it sounds like.
That's about it. Yeah. It also came out in the 90s. So yeah.
Awesome. All right, Aaron, great stories. Love having you on. I'm going to be in town for another couple of weeks. So hopefully we'll be crossing paths and doing more comedy together.
I will say too, I try to give this guy a shout out as often as I can. The room that we were in was the Green Room, which is in Hamden, which is run by one of my personal favorites here in Baltimore, Michael Furr. He was the first person that really gave me a shot, really gave me advice on comedy. The number one piece of advice I got for any comedians out there was I had a really horrible show and I was like kicking myself, and he stopped and he goes, was that the worst you've ever done in comedy? And I said, well, no, I've had worse shows. And he's like, was it the best? And I said, no. He goes, well, then you just did stand up. You just did comedy. And it was like, it was kind of like a life lesson of like, there's a worst and there's a best. And then there's all of this in between. And it's like, it's kind of what it is. And it kind of helped me, you know, when I have those bad nights, I'm like, there was always a worse one. There was always a better one. And even if it was the worst or it was the best, there's still going to be other ones that might end up being the worst or the best and everything. So, and so much more that he gave me, but he's amazing. If you ever get a chance to work with him or see his work.
Michael Furr. Yeah. He's the guy running Baltimore comedy right now. He is a great, great dude. Love having him in the scene. I'm glad that he started. And I'm glad to call him a friend too, as well. But since we're going to dole out advice, I'm going to give you one from one of my friends, up in Boston, former guest of the podcast, Dana J. Bine, comedian. One of the things that he says, I'm going to give you two. One of them is that your inner critic is an asshole. Just remember that. But more importantly, you never bomb at an open mic. You just did an open mic. That's what they are.
Yeah.
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 All right.
Yeah.
Great having you on the show.
100%. Thanks, man. This is a lot of fun.